College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Early on Radio Row in New Orleans, it really starts to buzz. The deeper you get in the week, the closer to the Super Bowl. Athletes start to show up about Wednesday, Thursday. Hall of Famers, it is required that they sport their gold jackets on Radio Row. You can see them all over the room, which is pretty cool as well. Not there this year in New Orleans. In fact, I've been to New Orleans for other sporting events, but not for a Super Bowl, though it is now the 11th time that this championship game will land there in the Crescent City. Instead, we're getting the lay of the land from others who are on the ground. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If you missed my conversation with Ron Rivera, we will put that on our podcast. Different conversation with Lindsay Rhodes, longtime host and analyst who's big into the analytics and how AI is impacting football analysis. We have the same sense of humor. And so it's always good to have her on the show. We both love food. And so when I caught up with her, she was already holding court on Radio Row in New Orleans and wanted to make sure we got a scene set from her. So Lindsay, what's Radio Row been like so far?
Well, it's been so fun, first of all, just as a way to kind of like ease in to a degree, because it is slower first day of Radio Row. As you know, it will get incrementally busier every single day as we build up to the Super Bowl. But you know how these weeks are. It's like a reunion. You walk around and you're like, oh, hi, person that I have only talked to in a Zoom interview. Getting to see old friends and people that you've never met before throughout the industry. And, you know, most of the people that are listening right now are totally unfamiliar with Radio Row. Just conceptually, it's like a huge convention center space. Mm-hmm. With big sets on the outside and then like tables on the inside, and the tables on the inside, everybody is either a radio station or, you know, a podcast or something like that. And there's a lot of people buzzing about, and I don't know. They're all wild to me how these spaces come together. The thing I think that will be the most memorable about this particular, well, every Super Bowl is the food, how the food differs, right? Like when hit the restaurant spots at night for dinner, Amy.
Nice. Well, have you tried that yet, or is that on the list?
I got in late last night, so we hit a sushi restaurant. So one of my colleagues at Sumer Sports, who I'm here with, his name is Sam Brookhouse. He's an outstanding data scientist. Everybody should go find his work and follow him on the social media channels. He went to Tulane. He's from the area, so he is like our designated tour guide. And so he's making all of our dinner reservations and showing us around. And so we hit a sushi spot last night, and we went to Koshan the Butcher for sandwiches today, and it was delightful. So I'm really looking forward to eating very well this week.
My advice to you, the last time I was in New Orleans, I had oysters on the half shell. And because I was from New England and had never experienced that before, when they put the horseradish in front of me, I thought it was horseradish sauce, you know, some type of a mix. No, it was pure horseradish. Great. So I take a big, huge mouthful of horseradish.
Oh, Amy.
I nearly die. In front of colleagues, I have to politely spit out the horseradish before my tongue burns to complete shreds. Oh, yeah. It was one of my finest moments ever. So just beware of the horseradish, because it might bite back.
That's like your what is this green avocado / wasabi moment.
Right, exactly. Lindsay Rhodes is with us from New Orleans, back on Radio Row, and she's got the Sumer Sports show and lots of work for SI now, so you want to make sure you catch her there. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So, Lindsay, you were recently at the Senior Bowl, which I think is kind of an interesting juxtaposition of the guys who are at the pinnacle of their sport and the guys who want to get there. What stands out about that experience in Mobile?
First of all, it was my first time being on the ground in Mobile in a while. So I actually told my 25-year-old coworker that I've previously mentioned that the last time I was actually at the Senior Bowl was 2010. And I just kind of went, oh, no, I just did that. Like, I just fully made myself the oldest person he's ever met by name checking a date that he was probably in third grade. But so it's been a while since I was on the ground in Mobile. And one of my biggest takeaways, honestly, was how much I've relied on what other people have said over the years in Mobile and or social media clips of people playing well, and how much now I would advise people to understand that the opinions are so varied about those people, and how the way that the practices go, you can have one really outstanding play, one rep that's really good, and that clip goes viral, and then maybe you lose the next three reps. So I feel like my main takeaway, honestly, was that I kind of now, from now on, will treat all of those kinds of social media clips as kind of like we treat training camp clips now. You know, we've learned over the years that like one-handed catch on the sideline in training camp does not mean that you just drafted the next Jerry Rice, right? So I would kind of warn people against getting too enamored with people or making too much out of those single plays. Because there's definitely, there were a lot of the plays that I saw where it's like, you do want that high end, that wow, and their ability to do the thing that we see in that clip. But then you would also prefer, I think, ideally, to see it consistently happen or, you know, not get beat on the next rep, that kind of thing. And there was a lot of like high low, I think, that it felt a little roller coastery for a lot of the prospects in that regard. So 50,000 foot view, that I think was an interesting takeaway for me in terms of perspective.
You can understand why coaches, general managers, scouts put these prospects through extensive interviews and workouts, both in groups and individually at the combine, at the Senior Bowl, but also privately, because of what you're saying. You can see one moment and believe you found the next can't miss player, but that could just be exactly that, a moment in time.
Yep. Another thing, honestly, that I think was interesting that I took away, and we can talk about the position groups or any, you know, specific players also, but I talked to one general manager who told me what they're looking for in a lot of cases is very different than what, you know, media members or evaluators that work in the media are looking for at these practices, because they're going to get the tape. The tapes get sent out of every practice to all of the teams afterwards. So he said, I'm not really looking at them from a football standpoint during the practice. What I'm looking for is their interactions with their teammates, and then also the intangible things about the practice that you can't pick up on even from the stands. For instance, offensive linemen come draft time, one of the big stories with them is always, hey, this guy's always played tackle. He's one of the best tackles in college. But guess what? We look at his body type and we see a guard in the NFL or even a center. So you have guys that are moving to center and taking reps there who have played tackle, for instance, their entire career in college. And so what that means is that when you're on the ground and you're one of these evaluators that's up close or a team personnel member, you're looking for like, what was the coaching note that they gave them after they took this rep? Is this the first time that you've done this since, say, high school? Or, you know, how much experience do you have? Are these the first reps that you've had doing this? How quickly can you adjust? How quickly do you get better from first rep to second rep? Those kinds of things might tell a story that's even more important to them than whether or not that person just floored the competition all week long. Also, then, obviously, there's dynamics of, like, how you interact with your teammates. And, like, I was told that for like a center, you want the center to be somebody personality wise who can take control of the O-line room. And one person described that they wanted the center to be like borderline cocky. Like you're looking for someone who can really be a leader of that group. And I thought that that was interesting. And I mean, I think I probably would have thought that that would be something you're looking for in your left tackle, but I guess it makes sense that the center should be, you know, the one who's calling out the checks and stuff would be that guy. But I think that that's another interesting note, that they're looking for very different things and with very different contexts than we are in the stands.
Our favorite nerd, Lindsay Rhodes, already holding court in New Orleans. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Big news from the NFL. We hear Myles Garrett wants out of Cleveland. What's your reaction to that?
My first reaction, selfishly, Amy, because I'm a selfish human being, is that I went on a Cleveland radio station about a month ago. And I said that I thought that they were probably going to have to trade him. And I was like persona non grata in Cleveland for the next week. It was just like, I mean, my mentions, I had to mute them. And so when that news broke today that he had asked for a trade, there was definitely a little bit of like, oh, should I go and find some of those receipts and start doing some quote tweeting? But that's me selfishly. From a football standpoint, I am not particularly surprised, I think, because the Browns are a team that, I mean, we all know the ways that the Deshaun Watson contract set them back, right? Like they gave up so much. They paid him so much. It's, you can't metabolize a quarterback move like that quickly. That was one that's going to hurt you for a little while. And so I think that they're a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of when we can expect them to be competitive, unless they randomly happen to draft a quarterback who hits. But there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And there are no quarterbacks in this year's draft, even at the top, even where they're picking, that I think are sure things. So that's the one way out for them. But I don't think that that's a sure thing at all. And I think it's probably more likely than not that it doesn't work, just in terms of probability. And so I think he's probably looking at how many years left he has in his career. He's 29 years old. He is, I mean, you could call him the best player in the league, and you could make an argument for that. In terms of our Sumer Sports grade, like our scout grades, he is the highest graded player in the league, according to our scouts. He's just been wild. And we went back and looked at our football AI grades or metrics, and he's consistently in like the 100th percentile, the 98th percentile, and just about everything over the last handful of years. There's just been no drop off. So I think he's still got time left, and I think he wants to win. I think he wants something else than, you know, no offense to, and I'm about to drop a name, and I thought I shouldn't say this, but no offense to a Joe Thomas. I don't think that he wants to have a career where he plays, you know, his whole career for a team that doesn't go anywhere. So I think it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating in the ways that the next step, where does he go? Which are the teams that will pay the price for him? First, the next step is, what is the price? And I think the price is steep. Our comp at Sumer is the Khalil Mack trade, which is 2 1s plus. So I think that's where you're starting. I think it goes up from there. And then you have to go, everyone would want him, but who makes sense that can be competitive right away? So, because that's clearly what he's looking for. That also has draft capital to do this, but also doesn't need the draft capital to rebuild their team. So it becomes such an interesting exercise of like where to put him that I think will be a fun conversation to have for the next few days here.
And so the Cleveland Browns have no choice but to acquiesce, right?
I think so, just because, look, the Cleveland Browns don't have a lot of goodwill built up right now. And so if you take the best player, one of the best players, arguably the best defensive player in the league, very popular in Cleveland, and he's going to ask out, how do you not do that? How do you hold him hostage? How do you say, nope, sorry, you're just going to play here. We're going to keep you against your will. I just don't think that they have, I don't think that's the right move for them. And honestly, in some ways, I think that this kind of lets them off the hook to make a move that might actually be the better roster building move, which is why I brought it up a month ago on Cleveland Radio, thinking if I were the Browns, I would even consider doing this. And people were like, what are you talking about? He's so good. And I understand that. But my point is, you're going to pay this guy top of the market. He's so good. You need so many things. And they have a lot of draft picks this year, but they are way over the cap. So they're going to have to restructure some contracts. They don't have enough money right now to even sign all of the draft picks. And then you could go get a young edge rusher, or you could get two with these draft picks. And I realize that you're probably not going to get another Myles Garrett, but can you get somebody who gives you 80% of the Myles Garrett production and a couple of other positions that also contribute on the field? I think that's where the Browns are. They need to think about just buying in bulk right now. And so I think him asking for a trade kind of gives them a way out. It's not flattering that he doesn't want to be on their team, but it might give Andrew Berry, their general manager, a chance to trade him without being the general manager that traded Myles Garrett, as if it was his choice. It kind of gives him some cover, I think.
So he won't be the Nico Harrison of the NFL, is what you're saying.
The what? Why did I miss that reference? What's
Nico Harrison, the GM of the Dallas Mavericks.
That's why, because I'm not an NBA person. And boy, that has been the conversation
right
down here for the last few days, every show that I have been on has been like, what is your NFL comp? Or historically, has there ever been a trade like this in the NFL? I mean, everyone is taking that for obvious reasons. I mean, I'm clearly aware of the trade and also how bad the comps have been. No one can come up with one down here that really feels like it's landing in the right way.
Good to know people are talking about it in New Orleans as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence and Lindsay Rhodes. Because you're into some of the next level numbers and you've talked about it on our show, what's a next level stat or one of these analytics that maybe defines the season that we've seen, or if you want to go Super Bowl matchup, that could be relevant for the game?
So one of the things that popped up for me when trying to answer the question about Jalen Hurts, everybody's wanted to talk about Jalen Hurts for the last few weeks and kind of what his strengths, what his weaknesses are, all that kind of stuff. Largely because the passing game wasn't really hitting for the first couple of rounds of the postseason, and then it very much did against the Commanders, who are a defense that's very different than the other defenses that they've faced, right? Jalen Hurts, let's see, his accuracy ranks number one in our AI metrics, which I think is not at all what I expected. We have the ability at Sumer to go in and we have a model that uses tracking data and has learned how all of the different pieces on the field impact one another. So for instance, it understands that how defensive pressure changes which receiver is likely to be targeted. And so it's kind of like dots, but with extra information, and we can go frame by frame and stop it and hover over a wide receiver, and it'll tell you what the completion probability is at that moment in time, if they were to throw there. And also the expected receiving yards that they would likely pick up, because it knows where the defenders are on the field, the speed that they're traveling, and the angle at which they're taking. I mean, you're talking about like, this is nerd heaven for me, this new thing that they've created, and I'm having so much fun with it. So this is how they discern these numbers, right? It's coming specifically from tracking data that's player agnostic. They don't care about names. And it says that Jalen Hurts is the most accurate quarterback in the NFL this year. He's accurate all over the field. But, and I think that this is fascinating, his decision-making ranks 22nd. So he's like the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of decision-making, which is they're saying like, okay, based on the given receivers that were available where the defenders were, did you hit the right one to maximize yards? And so, you know, in a perfect world, you'd want both of those rankings to be really high, and his is high in one and not in the others. Now, the inverse of this has nothing to do with this game, but I think is fascinating, is Anthony Richardson, who ranked number one in decision-making, Amy.
Wow.
What?
No way.
What? I know. And second to last in accuracy.
Oh.
So I think that this has nothing to do with the Super Bowl, but pivoting off of the Jalen Hurts, I think it's a really interesting set of data points here that point to Anthony Richardson and a potential future and what that might look like. Because when he was taken off the field earlier this season, me, a lot of people, we were like, oh, second year quarterback, young, he's still learning how to process. He needs the game to slow down, maybe get him in the tape room. And then once he sees the field better, this will get better. Well, the decision-making, it says that he's maximizing the number of yards in terms of the players that he's targeting. Partially, they're behind. He's targeting deep. Like, we know his arm is really strong. That's the strength of his. So that's part of that component. But the fact that he's second to last in accuracy shows me, and maybe I'm wrong, that feels like something he can get better at. Mm-hmm. Like, you either see the field or you don't. Maybe it'll get better over time with experience, for sure. But accuracy feels like, I mean, dude, just like go out and throw the ball to a few targets over and over and over again. And
it's like free throws.
I mean, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but it feels like of the two that would be the easier one to turn around. So I found those two data points and the fact that Jalen Hurts and Anthony Richardson were like the inverse of each other. I thought that was really interesting.
What metric out there measures the inane ability of the Chiefs to come up with the big play in the moment that they absolutely have to have it?
I don't know. And that's the question that I've been asking all of the people I work with that are smarter than me all week long. Like, how do we explain the Chiefs? Like, we need to find a way to explain the Chiefs. The best thing that we've come up with is just they're so good on third down that they keep themselves out of third and longs at a pretty good, you know, a good clip. So they're ahead of the sticks, and they're not explosive. They're not exciting in a way that, like, moves the needle in any of the number metrics. They are surgical.
Except winning.
Right. But, I mean, to me, all of everything I'm seeing here with the Chiefs points to Andy Reid, frankly, this season, even more than Patrick Mahomes this season, because it feels like they are just dialing up exactly the right play at exactly the right time.
Yes.
Just to do what is necessary on that play to go to the next play. So it's a weird Super Bowl because everything in my head points to the Eagles. I think their roster is better top to bottom. But then there's something about the Chiefs and how they have trained themselves how to win and also have high-value assets at premium positions that can tilt a game. Is Chris Jones the best defender in this game? He might be. Regardless of how many good defenders there are on the Eagles, is he maybe the best and at a position that really matters, right? You've got Trent McDuffie at corner, who's insane. Is he going to shut down one of these wide receivers or make it much harder for them to throw the ball? That's vital in this game. You've got a great interior offensive line, and then you've got Andy Reid on the sideline and Spagnuolo, who people are asking me if he belongs in the Hall of Fame, even if he never coaches as a head coach again. I mean, he's that good. And then obviously Patrick Mahomes. So there's part of me that's like, head says Eagles. I think my gut's telling me Chiefs in a close game.
Wow, can't wait. Even though it is a rematch of a couple years ago, a lot is different. And Lindsay's there now, which makes it all different. Food critic, analytics nerd, love it. You'll hear as part of the Sumer Sports Show, also at the SI Fantasy Dirt Pod, mostly just wandering around and doing a bunch of interviews, it sounds like. From the photos, you've been in high demand.
Oh, yeah, Amy, that's it. Super high demand. You are so lucky to talk to me. I tell you what.
You're a goof. Twice in a couple of months. This is awesome. We need to do this more often. Thank you, Lindsay. 100%. Have fun.
Thanks, Amy.
She makes me laugh. And also our conversations are unlike any other that I do as part of the show. Wide ranging. She tells me that she warns me that she babbles and goes on and on. But I think it's great stuff. And also entertaining, which is the name of the game. This portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. Did you hear what she had to say about trading Myles Garrett? I'm getting your reaction as well. So find us online at A-Law Radio, plus our Facebook page. We'll share some of those. And still to come, Josh Harris, the owner of the Commanders, holding court himself, not in New Orleans, but talking about the Commanders' first full year with the new ownership. And obviously, Jaden Daniels, Dan Quinn, getting to the NFC Championship game. As well as Roger Goodell answering questions about the AFC Championship and those refs who obviously favor the Chiefs. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
It's tough, you know, because I feel like I've watched Luka since he was 18 years old. I remember going to a practice and it was Dirk and Luka, and seeing his maturation and how great of a basketball player he's became has been fun to watch. And as a Dallas fan, it hurts me, but I'm happy for him that he's going to be able to go out there and be in L.A. and get to try to achieve his dream of winning a championship. But he did so much, not only for the basketball team, but for the city of Dallas. So I'll always be appreciative of those years. But I'm excited for the Mavericks moving forward and the guys that they brought in.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Listen to that. Patrick Mahomes is just like you. It hurts his heart that the Mavericks traded Luka to the Lakers without warning. No any indication. No, hey, watch out. Something seismic is coming down the line. Nope. Here today, gone tomorrow. And the reports are that Luka was pretty emotional over the news when he found out. And whether or not you believe he cried, I think if I had just purchased a $15 million home in the Dallas area, I might shed a few tears too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, 855-212-4227. Daniel is in Dallas. Daniel, what do you think?
Well, we're in mourning, Amy. This was devastating to the city. It's I can't even put it into words. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. we drafted Luke, or the Mavericks drafted Luke, and we saw him grow up here to the man he became. And to have that just completely blindsided by this is the thing of it is, it's Nico, the entire last 4 years was built around Luka.
Right.
And for this to come in like how it ended up, but something you said earlier, you know, you made me think about what might be Nico's legacy is going to be the guy who traded away Luka Doncic.
Right.
And for that to happen, you know, this, again, just the way it did, there's something's going to come out of this, like globally, you know, from all sports teams, in my opinion, that, you know, before they make a trade of some sort, you know, is what's the Nico rule? You know, how is this guy perceived, you know, in the environment? Because we are angry. You know, we are sad. You have basically just taken our child from us, you know, and I'm not even sure that winning a championship will cure that. It will help. Again, this is just my opinion because we were so endeared to Luka, what he brought to this team. And we thought, because since Dirk retired, well, okay, our championship chances are really shot for the next 20 years. And then lo and behold, you know, we got Luka. It's like, how did this happen? You know, we got this savant of basketball. And what do we do now? It's like, well, we're on the road again. We're practically there. Went to the finals last year. We're bringing in talent that has never happened before in Dallas. And so we're like right there on the cusp. You know, we can see the finish line. And then this happens. And so we're just like we're not even aspired for anything at this point. But I just like the way you talk about it and give me a chance to give us people in Dallas a chance just to tell the rest of the world, you know, we don't want to wish this on anybody's sports team and their families because it is devastating.
Well, and I appreciate that, Daniel. I hope it helps to talk about it. Although I can imagine there's not much else being talked about in Dallas. It really does strike me as I hear from people, but also as I think about the situation, that general managers in the NBA wait their entire careers for a player like Luka to be available in the draft. They wait their entire careers for the chance to build around a player like Luka. And I agree with what Daniel said. Everything Nico Harrison has done to this point has been about putting the right team around Luka. Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson. How about trading away guys like Kristaps Porzingis, Jalen Brunson? I mean, they made moves to try to put the right pieces around a generational talent. And then you trade him away at 25 years old, even with all the issues. I'll say it again. How can you be so convinced he's never going to change? How can you be so convinced he bought a $15 million house in Dallas, but he doesn't want to stay? How can you be so convinced that this year you might actually get back to the NBA Finals and win? Now, I know it's not been the season to this point that they wanted, but there's still plenty of time. The year is so long. I just don't understand how you give up this quickly. And that's what it feels like to me. Unless this edict came down from the ownership and Nico Harrison is taking the fall for them or is bearing the brunt for them. Hey, we'll give you a sizable raise if you'll pretend like this was your idea. But also, if you're a general manager and your owner tells you, compels you, to trade away the best player on your roster and one of the best players on the planet? Is that really a job you want? They're handcuffing you if that's honestly what they want you to do. This is not building a team. This is tearing it down and alienating a fan base while you're at it. And again, I do not know what else is going on, but let's just say they really are upset about the fact that he won't stop drinking beer and it's come to a head. They still got to the NBA Finals a year ago. He's still averaging 28-8-8. And since Luka really wants to win a championship and really wants a career that goes beyond his 20s, he's going to figure out that he has to take better care of his physical body. It's just a matter of time. That's the thing that I don't understand. How do you give up at this point? And then beyond that, like I said on our last show, if you are determined to trade him, why limit yourself to one team who doesn't have a whole lot to offer? That part I don't get either. Who knows? Maybe at some point we'll have the truth, but I highly doubt it. I'm not smelling what they're stepping in right now. At A-Law Radio and then our Facebook page, let's quick talk to Will, who's in Atlanta. I just have about 60 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'll be quick, and I'm not saying this to be a contrarian, and this is not a get-off-my-lawn moment. I'm only 47 years old. Luka is being compared to some of the greatest basketball players of all time, i.e. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James. He is not that, Amy. He's not that. He dribbles the ball for 20 seconds. He throws up a lot of shots. He puts up a lot of points. He is an offensive savant. He's not a basketball savant. He does not play defense. Furthermore, he does not even try to play defense. He has the worst pass-by rate of any starter. Look it up. He's terrible on defense. So what they decided was, do we want to invest this $350 million in somebody that's lazy and has a laissez-faire attitude, which is worse? And most importantly, he's the best player. So if his attitude is laissez-faire, that trickles down into the other players that are not as talented as him, Amy. That's what's most important. They didn't want to invest that money because what does money do? It makes you more of what you are. So if he's fat and lazy now, he's going to be fatter and lazier with $350 million guaranteed in his pocket. I'll leave you alone now.
All right. Thank you, Will. I appreciate that. I kind of think that's extreme to call him fat. I don't think that's fair. He's not fat. We can all see him. Is he carrying a little more weight than the team would like? Okay. And that is his responsibility as a professional. Again, I'll give you that. But to give up on him when you still have him under contract for a couple of years, you don't need to make this move right now. And to do it without getting the best that you possibly can in return, I still think it's bad business. Again, even if you're sure that he's not the right plan for the future, could he play better defense if he was in better shape? Yep, that stands to reason. Maybe bring someone in who not only can appeal to him about how much fitness matters, but as much as I don't love ultimatums, make sure he's got the perspective of the franchise. If you haven't already, here's where we are, right? Here's what we have to accomplish in order for us to be able to work together moving forward. I guess I'm a huge fan of the communication, even over-communicating. My husband and my friends would tell you that it's absolutely the case. I always err on the side of over-communicating. It just seems to me that the positives far outweigh the negatives. And how much better could he be if he started taking his fitness and his nutrition more seriously? Again, not the first athlete in his early 20s to decide that he could get by on talent alone. It's an epiphany that many have to go through. And the sacrifices he's made since he was a teenager for the sport indicate that he cares. He's neither fat nor lazy, just needs a shift in perspective. And I don't feel like that makes him a lost cause. But again, I'm not on the inside, and maybe we'll learn more as we continue forward. At A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page too, would you trade Myles Garrett? That's a question. And straight ahead, we'll hear from Josh Harris, the owner who is really getting a lot of credit for this major turnaround with the Commanders, who will not be changing their name. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Third down to 10. Snap to Goff. Steps up. Good pocket. Throws in the middle. Field. Picked off.
Jeremy Chinn's got it. That's it. Celebrate like it's 1991. We're going to the NFC Championship game.
This is the Motown, the home of Motown, and tonight they'll be playing the blues, baby.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The unmistakable radio crew of the Washington Commanders. And yes, they exceeded many expectations by getting to the NFC Championship in the first year under the new regime. So not just ownership, but new general manager, new head coach, new offensive coordinator. So significant in the rookie quarterback's development. But it wasn't just Jaden Daniels. They had a bunch of young players on this roster. And even internally, from what we've heard with insiders who cover the team, they're ahead of schedule. But all of that is great news for the Commanders, who, by the way, will be keeping their name. New majority owner. I guess we can stop calling him new owner, but just to differentiate between him and Daniel Snyder, Josh Harris, he's beaming over what they accomplished this year.
I'd be lying if I didn't say that I wish we were in New Orleans. That aside, I mean, obviously, I couldn't be prouder of the team, the players, the fans, the coaching staff, front office.
It's pretty stark compared to what we got with Dan Snyder. Even when he was no longer allowed, quote unquote, to be involved with day-to-day operations, fact is, the stink was still there, if you will. You can clean it up. You can shine it up. You can even put it in the wash or the wash, as some family members say. But what you can't do is erase the impact and the toxic culture. And what did we hear from Chris Russell about a week and a half ago, who worked for the team and in radio there, but covered the team extensively? It was like walking on eggshells around the facilities, always wondering if you were going to be the next target, being very careful not to offend the owner or to get on his bad side, because it could go horribly wrong for you and you could get called out and embarrassed, humiliated. So really difficult working conditions. And he says it's like night and day now with Josh Harris and Magic Johnson and some of the others who are part of that ownership group. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Of course, they've brought in a bunch of new players, including Jaden Daniels, still looking for the right pieces to get them over the hump.
Where we can find players that, you know, are great at what they do and fit our culture and are great teammates and are situationally aware and hit hard and are tough, like we're gonna get them to come.
It's amazing what a difference a year can make, right? Because let's be fair. This time last year, or even going back 2 years, before things had started to change, when the NFL was still running interference for Daniel Snyder, how many football players would have picked Washington as their free agent destination? The team was mismanaged, it was misrun, and it wasn't a winner. Ron Rivera managed to get them to the NFC East title in 2020. They hosted a playoff game. They never had a quarterback really over that time. They tried and missed a bunch of different options. And if you missed my conversation with Ron, he has been interviewing for different jobs in this current hiring cycle. I asked him about coaching versus managing. He's been very candid about how difficult it was, how much his time in Washington weighed on him. The weight of carrying everything that was happening around the team at the end of Daniel Snyder's tenure, he said people don't have any idea what that was like, trying to coach in that situation. So I'm rooting for him to get another job. And if you missed the conversation, we're going to bring back part of it next hour. But he's really candid about how challenging and how difficult it was to coach with the old regime. But now, following their success in 24 and the bright hope for the future, how many free agents look at Washington differently? Now it can become a destination. Get in at the ground level. And the Commanders have money to spend. Why? Because Jaden Daniels, their quarterback, is on a rookie deal.
Yeah, we have a massive opportunity. And you know, none of us are taking that lightly. We're all fully committed to continuing to build our team and be elite.
I've already seen some of the tweets and posts on social about how Myles Garrett would be welcome. He'd be welcome in D.C. Is that a possibility? It's food for thought. After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll get more from Roger Goodell next hour. However, while we're talking about the area, the other team there is the Baltimore Ravens, and there have been new allegations made against Justin Tucker going back to the early stages of his career, two more massage therapists have come out and have joined what's a growing voice and complaint about him and his actions, inappropriate behavior, again, early in his career, going back to 2012 through 2016. But the NFL did not know about it ahead of time.
A surprise, but also, you know, there's a process for that, as you say, both civil and potentially criminal. We obviously have NFL investigations for that, too. We obviously look at that where we don't want to interfere with the criminal side of that. But so we will look into those issues. They're obviously serious issues, and he's taking that seriously.
Yeah, I don't think he has any choice. Although at this point, there have been no lawsuits filed, and I don't know about statute of limitations or whether or not a DA would take this to a grand jury to see if they could be indicted. I'm not sure even if the massage therapists or these massage parlors are willing to take it that step. That's the part that's hard. At this point, there have been no legal steps taken. It's a reporting job done after an anonymous tip. And yes, now women have come forward. But what does the NFL do with that? The league doesn't have any subpoena power. Can it ask these women to identify themselves or to be identified and to work with the league to tell their stories to their own investigators? Sure. Can they ask Justin Tucker to cooperate? Sounds like Roger Goodell's already been in touch with him. Beyond that, what can they do? So I'm not sure where it goes from here, if civil lawsuits will end up being filed against Tucker. He's adamant that these allegations are untrue, that they were isolated moments that were made to be something that he never intended them to be. But I am glad that the NFL is monitoring and will investigate personally. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.